The Guardian.
Football Weekly is sponsored by Squarespace. Make your next move and create your next website using Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code Football Weekly to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
Today, sensitive souls upset by Fox News as champions say dilly-dong, the witch is dead, and lump three past Liverpool. Pod salutes the utterly vindicated Vardy and Co, but asks, can they do it against a side that doesn't have Lucas Leiva at centre-back? It's a question we'll see answered this weekend as they take on Hull while Liverpool host Arsenal in what could be Arsenal's last ever visit to Anfield. And Watford yet again failed to get a mention. There's championship news and business from abroad, from Barca back on top in Spain but about to lose their manager to controversy with a capital K in the Coppa Italia. All of that plus your messages in this Football Weekly Extra. Yeah, say that, listeners, but Watford are very much going to get a mention today because, look, it's Simon Burnton.
Hello.
Hi, Simon. You're just back from a bout of being unwell. Great to see you here.
Excellent to be here. Thank you very much.
All right, good. James Horncastle also presente.
That's me.
And this is Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Now, I don't know if people want us to go big on that whole Leicester thing again, but they seem to be all over the papers. Once more, Monday night after we did our Football Weekly thing with a little bit of kind of Ranieri soul searching and what does this mean type stuff, they all turned up in a very real sense at the King Power and beat Liverpool 3-1. Lots of quotes from the players afterwards about how this was their answer to criticism and how their heads are high now. And explanations as well. Jamie Vardy saying, Craig Shakespeare, of course, the man in charge now, he said, he asked Shakes. Before the game, we spoke with Shakes, and he asked us what he thought were the best actions to take. We thought it was to press higher and win the ball higher up. We did that and hurt them. What did you think watching this, James?
Well, I thought they were damned if they won that game and damned if they didn't, because by winning it, they kind of confirmed a lot of people's deepest suspicions about it. But Liverpool played right into their hands, although you can kind of forgive them, I suppose, because how often have we seen Leicester do what they did last season, this season? Aside from the City game, that's about it. Saw them do it in the Champions League. But they played right into their hands. And again, Klopp got a lot of criticism, rightly so, I thought, after the game for playing Lucas Leiva in that centre-back position when he had a kind of natural centre-back on the bench who was fit and ready, as they all were after a 2-week break.
And we all made the problem, do you think? A 2-week break?
Well, I don't know what they got up to in their little fortnight away in Spain, but it clearly didn't get their mind right for this game. But maybe they'll have to have a reaction when they play Arsenal at the weekend.
When they play the worst away team in the Premier League. Were you surprised by Monday's dramatic return to form, Barry?
I did find it... my lip curling with cynicism when I saw them roar out of the traps, the Leicester players, as they in the manner in which they did. But it would also suggest that perhaps the decision to get rid of Ranieri, while not one I will ever think was the right one, may have been the right one. because it didn't look as if he was ever going to get a tune like that out of them. But I wouldn't read too much into that one game. Let's see how they get on for the rest of the season, and right. Let's see how they get on against a side that isn't as terrible as Liverpool were on Monday night.
Okay, Jean Flamboyant's very much on that well done for getting rid of Ranieri thing. He says, Leicester, it's rarely reported that the players were given an unusual amount of autonomy during the relegation survival and league win. They have demonstrated that they know perhaps better than Claudio Ranieri how to win matches. They were right to be fed up with training for one system and then being told on the morning of the game that they were to play another one. Other people pointing out, Simon, that when Mourinho went under similar circumstances at Chelsea, a lot of people were highlighting his own role in his downfall, but people have been somewhat slow to do that for the sainted Claudio. An auxiliary issue perhaps going forward is that when a locker room gets the taste of blood in the way that they have, they're going to be quite a difficult side or set of players to manage in future.
Well, I mean, possibly. It may be that they are hungry now just for a bit of
stability, both tactically and managerially. This has been a bit of a down season for them, and that period is now potentially over, and maybe they could settle down and focus and play and behave in a more professional manner for the rest of the season, rescue their Premier League status, onwards and upwards for the future. As far as Monday's concerned, I mean, the first goal, Vardy's first goal, was just so damned easy. It was inexplicably and unjustifiably straightforward. And, you know, Leicester were allowed to play to their strengths in the most. I mean, Liverpool turned up and defended like kindergarten children and got the punishment they deserve for it. Mm. So they play Hull this weekend. And obviously that's how they started this season, with an unlikely, totally unexpected defeat at newly promoted and widely written off Hull City. And, you know, as they showed against Manchester City, Monday wasn't the first time they've turned up in a big home game against big opponents.
Right.
You know, but now's the time to see that they can do it again and again. Mm. And obviously last season they could, but the question mark now hangs over them.
Well, Hull haven't won in 12 on the road. Question marks equally over Maguire's presence and Lazar Markovic too. Big question marks over who's going to be in charge. Craig Shakespeare making his bid straight after the game for the job on a permanent basis. However, excitingly, there's talk of Roy Hodgson after their previous success, bringing in an old fella who'd just had an international disaster against a side from the extreme north.
I don't see what the rush is. I agree with Barry. Let's kind of see what Shakespeare can do beyond this game. See if he can actually sustain it. And then, of course, he's already thrown his hat into the ring for it to be given on a permanent basis. The players seem to be behind him. But also get to the summer, and if they survive, kind of say, look, we're Leicester City. We're still a team that were champions a year ago. Quite attractive. I mean, I remember before the first leg against Sevilla, Monchi, the director of sports there, said, I don't really understand what's happening at Leicester because I look at their squad and they've got a very good group of players. So it could actually have an appeal for a manager who, let's be frank, is a lot sexier than Roy Hodgson.
Who are you thinking of?
Well, I'm not thinking of anyone in particular, but just not Roy Hodgson. I don't think it was necessarily he did. I just remember his final press conference, which he felt he didn't have to do with England, and said, I don't know why I'm here. I just lost a lot of kind of respect for
right.
Hodge.
Yeah. But it still hurts. Yeah.
But have Leicester's owners not sort of basically just said, by sacking Ranieri, all we are interested in doing is staying in the Premier League? So if that's all they're interested in doing, I'd say Roy Hodgson is probably perfect. Yeah. You know, he'll get results against teams Leicester should be beating, may get the occasional impressive scalp, and probably finish between, I don't know, 8th and 15th with monotonous regularity.
But the second Ranieri doesn't say that being in the Premier League is the extent of their ambitions. It says that's the very minimum ambition. You know, beyond that, there's as they've proven, there's no ceiling.
Oh. I mean, this game against Hull is quite interesting because it seems like a clash of styles between two managers new to managing in the Premier League. You know, Craig Shakespeare conveys every impression of being the proper football man, whereas Silva is, you know, exotic foreigner who has no idea what he's doing. Hmm. So if it was at Hull, I'd think it would be a more interesting game, but Hull City's form on the road is so bad.
They haven't won in 12 games away.
It's quite interesting, the parallel, really, between the situation that Leicester find themselves in now and how the situation Hull found themselves in at the beginning of the season. Because Bruce had walked away, and then Mike Freeland comes in. Everyone was like, he's not going to be the kind of permanent manager. Has two great results to start the season. The first one against Leicester. All of a sudden, there is this momentum to give him the job, which turned out to be completely the wrong decision. And now you kind of look at that, well, might that happen with Craig Shakespeare? You never know. You know.
Blimey, that sounds a bit ominous, James. All right. Well, we'll have a quick pause to mull that over and then come back talking about Liverpool.
Create a beautiful website or online store with an award-winning template from Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code FOOTBALLWEEKLY to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
Jürgen Klopp's side, one win in 12 matches since the turn of the year. Four of their five defeats in the league have been decides in the drop zone. What does that say, Simon?
Well, I guess it asks questions of the motivation. They've certainly, in their performance on Monday, gave a pretty good answer to the whole winter break question.
Right.
Can we put that behind us now? Obviously, it doesn't do a great deal of good. But famously, they're also top of the top six mini-league.
Oh, yeah. Which is interesting because they're playing Arsenal this weekend. Right. Yeah, because I was going to say that relegation zone business, is that about teams down there playing a certain kind of football to which Jurgen Klopp has basically no answer?
I'm not sure that that is. I don't think that there is a single brand of football practiced by relegation-threatened sides.
Do they tend to, for example, pack men behind the ball and let Liverpool come onto them?
Well, yes. And certainly the other members of the top six are perhaps the only other clubs that might arrive at Anfield with genuine ambition. You know, they're not the only club to have to deal with that, and they've been having to deal with it for a long time. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure that Klopp changes his tactics. He expects the same trick to work every time.
Mm.
And it relies a lot on a few players playing to a few individuals playing to a very high standard with enormous intensity. And whether it is possible to sustain that over a season and in every game rather than focusing on specific kind of key games is the question that they haven't answered.
Right. It was the pace of Vardy against that Liverpool defence that proved very much Liverpool's undoing. Arsenal presumably can replicate that trick, can they, should they choose to, with the likes of Walcott?
Yes, although their last visit to Merseyside, or let's say the Northwest, kind of coincided with a serious downturn in Arsenal's title chances, really knocked everyone's confidence in that when they played against Everton and then against Man City.
Right.
I look at Arsenal and this thing, I think Liverpool at home, the last time they played at Anfield, they beat Spurs. As Simon mentioned, they seem to have no problem getting up for these kind of games. Again, these kind of opponents seem to play into Liverpool's hands. I suppose my concern with Liverpool going to this game, everyone's made a great deal about the defence and the problems that that's had. But in terms of going forward and scoring goals, they seem to be having problems at the moment as well.
No Henderson, is that why?
Well, the midfield couldn't seem to string a single pass together against Leicester. They were very imprecise. And they couldn't kind of supply the front line, but they just don't have a centre forward. Liverpool essentially, it's clear that Sturridge does not fit into Klopp's plans. And Firmino's form at the start of the season, he was brilliant then, seems to have faded. Mane obviously went away for the African Cup of Nations, and then you just think there's problems at both ends really for Liverpool at the moment.
But they do seem to be over reliant on Mane. If he doesn't play well, they tend not to play well. And I've been reading a lot of stuff recently, people suggesting that as far as playing for a club with Champions League aspirations, Daniel Sturridge is a beaten docket, and he is noticeably slower than he used to be, and the people writing his epitaph as a top-class striker may well have a point. I think there is more to it than just shattered confidence that he isn't the player he was in terms of speed, which is probably not surprising considering how many injuries he's had. But now that he has had a spell free of injury, those injuries that he's finally free of seem to be taken a permanent toll.
Speaking of Champions League ambitions, both these clubs could be outside the top four come kickoff. Liverpool, of course, are outside at the moment, only 1 point ahead of Manchester United, who are looming ominously. And for Arsenal, of course, there's the question of whether to rest key players ahead of that delicately poised second leg. It's a cheap shot, isn't it?
Well, I just laugh when you talk about two teams desperate to get into the Champions League, desperate to go through this palaver of a rigmarole of going out in the last 16 each year, and then the last time Liverpool were desperate to get in the Champions League, they got in the Champions League and then sacked it off in a game against Real Madrid.
Well, yeah.
So why are they desperate to get in?
This game finished 3-3 last season and 2-2 the season before. Do you see another?
And 5-1 the season before.
Oh, yeah, right.
And 3-4 at the Emirates earlier this season.
Right, a lot of goals.
Yeah, it's been a goal fest. And in The other stat that was doing the rounds was that in the history of the Premier League, more 90-minute-plus goals have been scored in this game than any other.
Goals after the 90?
Yes.
I think it's 16.
16 goals, which is a pretty hefty number.
Wow, that's a big number by anyone's standards.
So I guess break it down. There's been 25 years out of the Premier League.
We don't have to break it down.
Well, we're going to break it down.
All right.
25 years of the Premier League. That's 50 fixtures between these teams,
yes,
home and away. Uh-huh. So 16 means that one in three of those fixtures, pretty much, has featured a goal in the 90th minute or later, which seems to me quite a high number.
Yeah, I'll say.
There is apparently some doubt over Mesut Ozil's fitness. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing for Arsenal at the moment. But
Well, that's going to be a terrifically exciting game with loads of goals. And that's happening on Saturday evening. Elsewhere, Manchester City are going to be at Sunderland. Manchester City, who featured in midweek action in their FA Cup fifth round replay at home to Huddersfield. They came out 5-1 winners, although it was a worrying start.
Well, again, Claudio Bravo not covering himself in any glory, not doing anything to kind of...
covering himself on egg all over his face.
And also, before this game, Pep Guardiola asked about the goalkeeping situation at City and saying that he's delighted with both of his goalkeepers and gave the impression that he doesn't see fit to change them in the summer, which again is surprising and again brings it home in that one instant early in that game against Huddersfield.
Harry Bunn.
Yeah.
Yep. He's on a roll, hey, and he basically just put it through Bravo's legs. It was almost Taibbi-esque, was it not?
Yeah.
Bravo, who had been dropped after conceding 16 goals from the previous 24 shots that he'd faced in the Premier League, he then drew ironic applause from the home fans when he actually managed to stop Huddersfield's second attempt later on. Guardiola took a dim view of that. Anyway, they looked great after that, didn't they, Barry?
Yeah, it was very much a second string Huddersfield side. They have three big games coming up. They face Newcastle on Saturday and they're currently third in the Championship, so it's understandable that their priorities lie elsewhere. It was a very impressive performance by City, although I think Huddersfield made it slightly easy for them by sort of imploding for 10 minutes. In the second half, City didn't get off to the greatest starts. Took them maybe half an hour to find their groove, but they were just far too good for that Huddersfield team.
All right. They are, as you say, hosting Newcastle at the weekend. Newcastle, who on Tuesday went to the Amex and beat Brighton to go back on top. They're now 2 points clear, thanks to one of the goals of the season.
The flukiest goal of the season.
Extraordinary. Describe it for us, James.
Well, they were playing it around the Brighton box and it just seemed to ricochet off one player, two player, and then just come off the kind of the outside of the foot and just leap.
It was Diame's foot.
Diame's foot.
Yeah, he was just standing there and the ball struck him, bounced off and...
Remarkable.
Yeah. Cool. Anyway, that was exciting. So 2-1 for Newcastle and Man City. That's what Huddersfield are going to be doing. They're hosting Newcastle. Sunderland will be hosting Man City. Black Cats, Barry, have conceded 6 goals and scored none since that remarkable 4-0 win over Crystal Palace. What's going on?
They're not very good.
All right.
But Papi Gilabodji is back from suspension, so everything will be okay.
All right.
I read a Fabio Barini quote on the Sunderland website about this game. He said of City, they seem a little shaky at the back. We have to take advantage of that. We need to frustrate them, and if that means we have to be defensive, then so be it. So if you're being defensive, you're not taking advantage of them being shaky at the back.
Right.
Anyway, it seemed all very confusing.
Well, let's hope that David Moyes doesn't echo Craig Shakespeare's approach and just ask the players what they think they should do. They need a result, don't they, Sunderland, Barry? They're down at the bottom. What are they, 3 points clear? They're only 3 points off safety.
Only three. Yeah, David Moyes said he thinks they need 5 wins from the remaining 12 games. I can't really see where they're going to get any of those.
Oh.
Unless they have matches coming up against teams that have decamped to the metaphorical beach. But, they've done it before. I personally don't think they'll do it this season, but who knows? I do know he's got a lot of injury concerns going into this game. Like Sunderland have already have several key players out as long-term injuries, but now you've got Pickford, Kirchhoff, Rodwell.
Is Pickford injured?
What?
Is Pickford in?
There seems to be concern he may be re-knacked, having just returned from knee-knack. And there were concerns that perhaps he was returning a little too early. I don't know if it's the same injury or not, but hopefully he'll be okay. Pienaar, Billy Jones, Jason Denae are all possibly out as well. So,
right.
Yeah, not. I would imagine they'll get slaughtered.
Right. Man United, meanwhile, who we mentioned before, are now only 1 point behind Liverpool, only two off the top four, will be hosting Bournemouth. That's the early game on Saturday. Anybody remember what happened the last time these two teams faced each other?
No, Jimbo. Was it an explosive encounter?
Go on, Barry.
Well, Old Trafford was evacuated because the security company had left a fake bomb strapped to a pipe in a toilet or something. And, the match had to be postponed. And there was all sorts of, you know, as is always the case, I think we saw it most recently at the Oscars, whenever somebody makes a mistake in their work, there's demands that they be sacked. And I think the guy responsible was, you know, cravenly apologetic. But yeah, it was big, big news at the time.
Mm. Will it be Eddie Howe is leaving duds all over the place at Old Trafford this time around?
Damp squibs.
Yeah, very much.
If Manchester United don't win this, then you know logic is dead. You know they are in such. I mean,
how long have you been away for? By
I was
the way,
say.
logic. You know,
died a long time.
Yeah,
ago.
It's okay. Gone. Forget it.
I mean, for all that Southampton outplayed them for periods of the EFL Cup final last week, they're. Results have been so compelling over an extended period now, Manchester United, and Bournemouth have been dreadful, and their defence is ripped to shreds on a weekly basis.
Mm.
And, you know, United won their first day of the season. It seems overwhelmingly likely that Manchester United will win this game.
Okay. Oh, by the way, apologies for my rubbish Zlatan stat, my Zlat, if you prefer. It was regarding Man United players, as people worked out when I was saying about it. He scored more goals than anybody else in all competitions since the start of last season, but he's only been there this season. It was obviously just Man United.
Zlatan has scored only one fewer goal in this calendar year than Bournemouth.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. It's a good stat. Spurs are taking on Everton. Spurs currently in second place. This clearly is just Lukaku against Kane, isn't it?
Yes.
We don't need to discuss anybody else. You've got two people who score goals and they're going to be facing each other. One of them has got 8 in 8 this calendar year. That's Lukaku.
Yeah.
The other one has got 12 in 11, so he's better. That's
only
Harry
Messi's
Kane.
He's got more in Europe's top five leagues. Yeah,
right.
Helps when you score a hat-trick against Stoke. Yeah.
If you go on goals per game, only Lewandowski's got a better goal per game ratio than percentage than...
Some good news for Everton this week as well, because it looks like Romelu Lukaku, who's got a very high-profile agent in Mino Raiola, said he's going to sign a new contract. 99.9% sure that he's going to do it. So.
When you said there's good news for Everton this weekend, that's not what I was expecting you to say.
Okay.
I thought you were going to be talking about Ronald Koeman's remarkably frank admission that Everton are lining up Wayne Rooney for a spectacular and, let's be frank, fairly heartwarming return to Goodison Park. What do you make of this, Barry?
I'm surprised, to be honest, because I'm not sure Wayne Rooney's good enough to get in the Everton team. But if they offer him a deal, I'd imagine he'll take it with both hands, because it's difficult to know what club of a similar or higher stature in the Premier League would want him. And I don't know if he'd have to take a massive pay cut to go to Everton. But it seems strange to me, but, you know... If they think they have a place for him, why not?
Right. Rooney earns a fortune, is in terminal decline, and as the last three seasons at United have shown, can only hold back a young and dynamic team. Right now, Koeman could get the same player by making Ross Barkley wear a rucksack full of boulders. That was Alex Chick's view. Do you agree with that, Sam?
I mean, I don't know. I still admire Rooney in some ways,
yep.
both as a player and you know, I think he's matured into an admirable older man, you know, older footballer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's probably is a role that he could play at Everton. So yeah, good. I mean, it would be, as you say, it would be a pleasing, heartwarming final chapter of his story, if that's what how it proves.
It would bookend nicely his extraordinary career.
It would rather, yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't seem to have any particular desire to leave that sort of part of the world where he was born and reared, and it doesn't sound like he wants to go to China. So, yeah.
All right, then.
Maybe Koeman's so up for it because Koeman knows he'll be at Barcelona next
right.
time.
Right. Ooh, spoiler alert. That's coming up in part three. More good news in what's been a week of happy tidings for Everton is that Alderweireld and Vertonghen, both in doubt for this game, Danny Rose, of course, definitely out, after they came off in the second half against Stoke last weekend, although I think Pochettino was saying that it was precautionary. I don't know if we've got any... No, we haven't got any updates.
If only they still had Fazio.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They've won their last 8 home games.
Who? Spurs. Everton?
Spurs.
This is at Spurs, isn't it?
One, yeah. They're in Premier League history, they have not won 9 on the spin.
Wow.
But this could be the moment.
Do you think it will, Simon?
Well, a lot depends on the state of their defence.
Right.
If those injuries are, you know, if they are without both central defenders, then that would be extremely encouraging for Everton. But, you know, their domestic form, their form at home at their own stadium is very, very good.
Right. Okay. And, of course, it comes down to Kane against Lukaku. At the very top of the pile, Chelsea, who will be visiting West Ham next Monday night. West Ham have Antonio suspended and Andy Carroll has a groin problem. And, yeah.
Carroll should be back there, maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's been linked with a move to the Chinese Super League as well.
Has he?
Yeah. Well, he was. Obviously, the window's now closed.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That would be an interesting move.
It doesn't matter anyway because all the papers declared that the title is done. Chelsea have won it, which,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to argue with that. 10 points clear. Right. Well, unless it all goes wrong, of course, at the London Stadium. But we'll see about that next week. Let's just have another little break and then we'll come back and talk about teams down the other end of the league. At the bottom, it's ever so tight. You've got Sunderland and 2 points ahead of them. You've got Hull and then just ahead of them, Crystal Palace. A goal difference ahead of them are Borough. So Borough, only goal difference outside the drop. Borough this weekend are going to Stoke. That's probably good news for Borough, isn't it? Given the way Stoke performed last weekend against Spurs.
Possibly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Borough have this endemic issue with scoring goals.
Right.
They lost last week at Crystal Palace, which is a very significant setback. They're doing, you know, that was a key game for them. There's clearly an issue when they do concede goals. You know, when you're finding goals so hard to score, when you do concede a goal, it is hard to even conceive of a route back into the match.
Right.
They've been playing kind of binary football. They either score no goals or one goal.
Mm.
Lately, not none at all. In the last three games, they haven't scored.
Yeah.
Stoke as well. Their last 5 league games, they scored 0-1, 0-1, and 1.
Oh, really?
So, if we were getting excited about Liverpool Arsenal based on previous results and history, then this is perhaps one to skip.
Right. Okay. Well, let's move on then. Hey, West Brom, they do score goals, don't they? And they're taking on that Palace side that's fresh from its first win in the league under Sam Allardyce at the weekend. Evil Andrew complaining about the total lack of West Brom mentions in Monday's pod. And this on a week, which they conquered 40 points. I think for the earliest point of the season that Tony Pulis has ever managed that.
Well, it was certainly top of my agenda. I came in here on Monday desperate to talk about it.
What were you going to say, Barry? I'm so sorry that I...
I don't know. I mean, this is Pulis v. Allardyce, isn't
yes.
it? So insert your own walking with dinosaurs gag.
No. The baggies have moved on. Pulis ball 2.0.
Yeah. They've been impressive, but, you know, how much more impressive... Is this the... height of their ambition, getting 40 points. I probably is, to be honest.
Right. I was going to mention that if you like stats and kind of numerical breakdowns and even a little bit of chat about expected goals and that, there's a very nice piece on Football 365 where they look at whether West Brom have changed at all under Pulis this season, given that they're scoring more goals and doing better. And the numbers say no, they haven't. If anything, they've got more Pulis-like. They have more long balls. Their possession has shrunk even more. They just seem to be finishing their chances even better. I was going to talk about that, but producer Ben has come up with a narrative that rather supersedes that, which is Tony Pulis would love to relegate Palace. Of course, he's the man who's just lost a court action against the Eagles that's going to cost him, what was it, £3 million?
More.
Yeah, more? More? Right. So this, if there's one team, if there's one club he'd like to get a result against, it's Palace.
Well, yeah, I that hadn't occurred to me, actually, but it's a very good point. Mm. I'd imagine nothing would give him more pleasure than to see Crystal Palace go down.
Maybe £3+ million would.
Yeah. But given that Brom are doing so well this season, they're so high up the table, because yep. there might be some kind of bonus for finishing so high, which might help him then pay for this.
Oh, yeah. Thing. That's also true. Yeah.
It would also be... one thing that did cross my mind is now that they have hit the magic 40-point mark and quite a bit of has been made of it, will the players down tools?
I don't think they will. I don't think they will.
Gareth McCauley in this kind of form. Wow. Europe's top-scoring defender.
Boom.
Gareth McCauley fit? He had got a terrible bang on the head quite recently.
If Pulis wants to really... you know, slam this down, Crystal Palace's story, he'll need McCauley. So McCauley better pull through.
He's not the only one who can score goals from the back. You know, Chris Brunt, who often, you know, plays in that kind of...
Yeah.
Okay, this is from producer Ben, again. He says, do you remember when Johan Cabaye used to be good? His assist against Borough was his first in 48 Premier League appearances, or, if you prefer, since October 2015. That's an astonishingly long time.
It's kind of like what Mesut Ozil's going through at Arsenal now. His assists. So that stat at the moment, which is like, I think only 4 of the 68 chances he's created have led to assists.
Really?
Yeah.
But Johan Cabaye.
Arsenal are failing him. But yeah, Cabaye. Yeah. Move back onto Cabaye. Yeah.
Cabaye. Do you know who his last assist was against, Johan Cabaye, all that time ago in October 2015?
Was it West Brom?
It was.
Wow.
Isn't that so football?
And here they are again.
Right.
It's logic.
West Brom have won 7 of their last 8 home games. Similar to Spurs in home form.
Right, you've been sat very patiently with that stat, Simon.
Yeah, yeah. And Palace have won once away since September.
Oh.
It should be a good weekend for Tony Pulis.
All right. Watford, Southampton. What you got for us, Simon?
So they're coming into this game on the back of the FL Cup final, and everyone's opinion of them is very high. They played great in that game, scored a couple of lovely goals. But their away form is really poor. You know, they throw points away against very mediocre sides. So going back to the start of November, they thrashed Sunderland 4-0. Doesn't really count. They drew at Stoke, Bray back at the start, near the start of that run. And they've lost at Swansea, Burnley, Everton, Palace and Hull. Oh. So this should be an opportunity for Watford. I mean, this is a winnable game for them.
And yet...
Well, there isn't really and yet.
Okay.
You know, they are next to each other in the table. Southampton hand points out to disappointing teams when they're on their travels. Watford are scoring goals at the moment. Zarate got injured last week and will be out for the rest of the season. But they're scoring goals. They have there was a period during the season after they lost Pereira when they seem to lack an idea of how a goal might feasibly be scored. And they played without any, not just without ambition, but just without idea for a while. But they have had creative players come back and come into the side, into the squad in January. And they are playing once again with purpose. And they are regularly scoring goals. And this should be a home win, I think.
There's an interview with Gabbiadini in Gazzetta dello Sport this week. And the question was, everything's going great at the moment for you, but you do know that the Titanic set off from Southampton. It's like, do you see icebergs ahead?
That's
like,
brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. Did they, just because the Gazzetta way would be to illustrate the whole interview with a picture, maybe, of Kate Winslet In Titanic.
In, behind Gabbiadini. In yeah. front of Gabbiadini.
They love yeah. illustrating anything football with a... It's like this movie. So here's a shot from that movie.
Yeah.
Did they do that?
No, I think the question took them as much, the graphic designers, as much by surprise as Gabbiadini.
It's a brilliant line of questioning, isn't it?
So what was his reply?
He said, well, you know, when you set off in the ocean, you know, there's fine weather, and then all of a sudden you can find yourself in a tempest.
Shame they're not playing Hull this weekend, because that could have really fitted the analogy, you know?
Hello, this is producer Ben, and I'm here to talk about beards, sort of. The reason why so many men are switching to Cornerstone isn't just because of their razors, they've also got some fantastic products that will help improve your shave like never before. First up is the pre-shave scrub and exfoliator. Its blend of cedarwood and volcanic sand will release ingrowing hairs, unblock pores and lift dead skin cells to leave your face smooth and clear and prevent nicks, cuts and shaving bumps. I use it and trust me, if I wasn't already married, I'd have loads of girlfriends. Try it for yourself. Head to cornerstone.co.uk/guardian50 and get 50% off your first box.
Listener's Corner. Here's Dee Hills, who says, re your Chelsea Spanish goalscorers fact. Simon, if you missed this, this was the fact that Chelsea have benefited from more goals by Spanish players this season than any club in Spain's Liga.
Yeah.
You knew, okay. He says, equally, Real Madrid have had 9 times more goals from a Welshman than Swansea, Cardiff and Newport combined. So how about that? Every week we get people asking why we're not paying tribute to Al Giroud, who so sadly passed away recently. This week it's David Metescu, who says, after spending a good amount of time discussing Al Giroud back in January 2015, I was surprised there was no mention still of his passing. All right. We've ticked that box, no? I don't remember this Al Giroud chat. Who was the Al Giroud fan?
I don't either.
Right. I mean, it's, you know...
Sorry, I can't even remember who Al Giroud is.
Al Giroud,
he's a singer.
Some Walk By Night. Yeah, he played the kind of jazz clarinet type. He was kind of...
Philippe would bring this up.
Philippe, yeah. It must have been him. Yeah. I tell you, of course, though, Sunday did see the really untimely and sad passing of Bill Paxton. Yeah. His game is over now. Game over, man. Game over, says Dave Whelan is my hero. I expect a tribute from AC Jimbo. Well, you know what, Dave Whelan is my hero. There might be something special in the works regarding Private Hudson. Mm. DW10 finally says, what are all these reports about Allegri telling friends he's off to Arsenal? James Horncastle. We can come to that in a second, because right now, that big red buzzer on the map on Madrid, it's Sid Lowe time. Mm. Oh, is that you, Sid?
Hello, Jimbo.
Sid,
how are you?
Did anybody else hear music, or am I having a stroke?
Shutting down Windows computer sound.
Oh, were you just shutting down a tab?
I am in front of the computer. It's not. You know what? It's not even shutting down a computer. My computer every 10 minutes or something tells me something that I don't need to know.
Right.
Like, you know, you've got this or you've got that.
Show.
Like, go on, piss off. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
anyway, no more swearing,
plug
Sid.
The phone in.
Sid, prepare your loudest klaxon. Hi, Liga.
There very much is a league, yes. It's been a bonkers few days, you know. You look at Real Madrid beaten in midweek last week, then they came back from 2-0 down to win 3-2 at the weekend against Villarreal. And then last night, they were, what was the score, 3-1 down, and they drew 3-3 with Las Palmas. And so, you know, they've dropped points. Barcelona are now top, albeit Madrid have got a game in hand. The first time Barcelona have been top since week 9, and it feels like a bit of a disaster for Madrid. But actually, you look at these last three games, and it could have been quite a lot worse.
Yeah. Messi scoring, creating another, and hitting the woodwork in Barcelona's result midweek, which was a 6-1 rout of Sporting Gijón.
Yeah, and after the game, Luis Enrique comes into the press conference, and I mean, it was a pretty routine win against a team that Barcelona do nearly always destroy. And the team, of course, where Luis Enrique began his career and still says he's a fan. And then he came into the press conference after the game and did the normal press conference, you know, just let all the questions go by, and then said, I've got something to say, I'm going. And I think everyone, what? Wow. Hang on. You know, this is the kind of thing that you expect to kind of a protocol for it, you know, the manager comes out with the president and the sporting director and all the rest of it. He just a routine press conference at the end of a routine game says, I'm off, which is a kind of very Luis Enrique kind of way of doing things, to be honest. Just a guy who won't go to award ceremonies, who's been prickly with the press, who's tried to do things on his own terms all the time, sometimes succeeded, sometimes it hasn't helped him very much. But he's not interested in playing the game. Right. And last night he didn't. He says he's tired.
Sid, are you not 100% massively surprised at his decision, are at the announcement?
No, not remotely surprised. The surprise comes from the timing of it and when it happened and how it was announced. It doesn't at all come from the fact that he's not staying. One of the things I was thinking about this earlier, I think there's kind of a lot of discussion about whether this was the right thing to do, whether it was right to announce it now and so on. And of course, one of the arguments is that it is the right thing to do because it calms things down, because it takes some of the tension out of a situation in which people are kind of on his back at the moment. And so, of course, you don't chant, for example, for a manager to get sacked if you know he's going at the end of the season anyway.
Right.
But perhaps when a manager announces he leaves, the sense of gratitude towards him comes back rather than the sense of bloody hell, what's happening to the team right now. Mm. So in that sense, it may calm things down. Perhaps it also helps with the players in that it's a way of saying, look, let's see this out. You don't need to be trying to kind of worry about what happens next season. You don't need to be thinking that your relative lack of a relationship with me matters. Ooh. But the flip side of it is that, yeah, but the problem is you now open up all of the debate about the succession. And the reason why I say this, it sounds like I've gone on a massive tangent, but I'm bringing it back now, is that, well, that would be true if it wasn't for the fact that that succession debate was already there.
Right.
That was happening anyway, and that's what I mean by this wasn't a surprise.
Yeah.
That it happened now, yes, but that it's going to happen, no.
No, okay. Let's debate the succession. Barry.
Sid, I think Arsene Wenger is going to be the next Barcelona manager. Am I mad?
Yes.
Okay.
Brendan?
Sid, who is going to be?
Surely.
Who?
Ranieri.
Who's going to be the next Barcelona manager, Sid?
Well, I don't know that at the moment. I think there are three candidates that are probably the most credible of the many, many names that have been talked about. Ernesto Valverde, the Athletic Bilbao manager, Jorge Sampaoli. And the other name, which at first I was a little bit dubious about, but I'm sort of starting to waver a bit, was Pochettino. Valverde, I think, is an interesting one because Valverde has twice been in a position where Barcelona wanted him. Both times, and it's interesting this because it's been talked about as if both times he missed the chance, but both times actually he turned down the chance because of the nature of his relationship with Athletic Bilbao, because of his belief that he couldn't go back on his word and he couldn't walk away from there. Barcelona had said to him, you're someone we want, so please kind of don't tie yourself up to a long deal. We want to be aware of your position. We want you to be a potential candidate. But the problem was that in a way that the relationship for Valverde was always with Antonio Subizarreta, previous sporting director, who's no longer there. But I think that there is now a relationship as well with the current sporting director. I'm not saying it's going to be him, but he feels to me like the man that makes the most sense.
Mm.
But honestly, at the moment, I suspect Barcelona themselves might not be completely sure who it is.
Wow, interesting, Sid. A brief word, if you can, on Luis Enrique, because I don't see enough Barcelona. You had a great article recently about the game against Leganes, where you said that it's an indication of how far the club have shifted from their roots, that there's not currently a Barcelona player in the top 10 passers in the league this season and not a Barcelona midfielder in the top 25. Is that why people are generally so down on Luis Enrique? And they are remarkably down, given that he won the Champions League and a treble in his first year, then a double last season, and is currently sitting on top of the Liga.
Yeah, let me put my hands up first of all, Jimbo, by the way. I got that statistic slightly wrong, which doesn't help, I know. So I had the list in front of me, literally player by player, an 80-player list. I don't believe it. There isn't a Barcelona midfielder in here. Actually, there is, Sergio Busquets. But Sergio Busquets is 14th, and I'd literally completely overlooked him. I thought, wow, he's not even a top 80, which, of course, I should have realised that him not being in the top 80, I must have not seen this right. But even so, Sergio Busquets at 14, I think it is an extraordinary collapse for a guy who, over the last four or five seasons, has been in the top two or three every season. Mm. And there's a very clear sense that I can not doing the things that supposedly define them. I'd like to chuck in a big caveat here, which is that I think it's partly being exaggerated. I think there is a puritanical streak in the kind of the surroundings of Barcelona, the way that people judge them. I think they are a team that still aspire to control games, but do it less and have kind of evolved away from that. But there's definitely a sense of kind of part of their identity. Now, I also think that I'm not as deeply rooted as we sometimes like to imagine. But that's a big, big part The other thing is, as I say, Luis Enrique doesn't play the game. He's not kind of embraced in quite the same way. He's not a Catalan, although he has played for Barcelona, although he did coach the youth system. You know, he wasn't kind of connected to the Guardiola team or not really connected to... And so I think those are elements of it, definitely.
All right, OK. Sadly, we lost a bit, though. We were breaking up, but I think we got the gist. Sid, it looks like you're set for an exceedingly exciting run-in then in the Liga.
Looking that way, isn't it?
Yeah. We'll let you go then. We'll catch up with you again soon. Thank you very much, Doctor.
My pleasure. Cheerio.
How about a bit of Scottish football news, Barry?
Yeah, quite a bulging feedback corner.
Oh, really?
Yeah, sorry. but some sad news for Celtic fans. Tommy Gemmell, one of the Lisbon Lions, has died aged 73 after a long illness. He was... sort of the original rampaging, overlapping fullback, you know, playing at a time when fullbacks didn't really rampage or overlap. Big game players, scored in their European Cup final win over Inter in 1967, scored again in their final defeat against Feyenoord, I think it was, in 1970. And, over 10 years at Celtic, he played 418 times and scored 63 goals, which is a pretty good return for a fullback. He claimed to have loved Jock Stein, his manager at Celtic, but was a little bit bitter over a number of things after leaving. He was unceremoniously dropped for a League Cup final once, given no explanation as to why. He was being pursued by Barcelona, who wanted to sign him, and he knew that he was being illegally tapped up, but Celtic continually denied that Barcelona were after him. See, that left him a little bit angry, the fact that they lied to him. And he got upset about the fact that he wasn't allowed or given the chance to say a proper goodbye to Celtic fans, because his last game for the team was played, I think, in Malta. So he didn't get the Parkhead send-off he wanted and perhaps thought he deserved and probably did deserve. And then he went on to manage Dundee, where he had the unique wheeze of pairing a young Gordon Strachan with a 32-year-old Jinky Johnson. And there's a good story about how Jinky Johnson and Gordon Strachan went on the lash one day and got so drunk that they accidentally ended up drinking in a hotel that was bar just across the street from a hotel that was actually owned by Tommy Gemmell. So he went and accosted Gordon Strachan and said, you know, what the hell, where are you, what are you doing? And Gordon Strachan was so scuttered that there was just no talking to him. And then he went in, when he was told that his two players were on the piss in this bar, he just said, who is it, Johnston and who else? He just knew it would be Jimmy Johnson would be one of them. But he went into the bar then to accost and Johnson, but he'd done a runner out the back.
Right.
Wow. But so he's died. And then the other big story in Scotland this week concerns Raith Rovers. And they found themselves in the unique position where all three of their goalkeepers were injured for a game against Ayr United on Tuesday night. They had tried to get a replacement in. They had several options open. You know, they could have got an under-21 goalkeeper in. They could have got an emergency loan, applied to the Scottish FA to get an emergency loan, or they could just sign an out-of-contract goalkeeper. And they tried to get Celtic's third-choice keeper, Logan Bailey, but he wouldn't go, pulled out at the last minute. So they ended up having to play an outfield player in goal from the start.
For the whole game?
For the whole game. A guy called Ryan Stevenson, I think he's a winger. And he only conceded one goal, they lost 1-0. He didn't have a huge amount to do, but he made a few saves, let in one goal. Raith are saying it's the Scottish FA's fault that they wanted to have the game postponed, but the Scottish FA insisted that they...
just
go ahead
sign
and play
a keeper.
It. And the Scottish FA are saying, as Raith predicted they would, are saying that, well, you had the opportunity to sign a keeper and you didn't. So,
right. Wayne Shaw, he was available.
He was, yeah. Yes.
Well,
so, yeah,
no one but themselves to blame.
It's kind of embarrassing. It's funny, but it's embarrassing for Scottish football. And another example of what seems a remarkable sort of habit of shooting itself in the foot.
Right. Okay. Well, nothing like that going on this week in Italian football, James, where we had the first legs of the semi-finals of the Coppa Italia. Excitingly, the second legs won't be for another month.
No.
Just to keep the excitement really built up. Fair to say there's a certain amount of controversy in both these semis. Would you care to sum up the problems?
It's a penalty controversy in the Juventus-Napoli game.
Mm.
Napoli felt they should have had a penalty, then Juventus went up the other end and got a penalty. They felt it shouldn't have been a penalty.
What's your take on this?
I think it wasn't a penalty.
The Juve won?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the Albiol penalty should have been a penalty.
Yeah, yeah. 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 Juve ended up winning that 3-1. Aurelio De Laurentiis, the volcanic Napoli president, declaring that he's going to field the kids for the second leg in protest.
Yes. De Laurentiis, who went off on one after the defeat to Real Madrid at the Bernabeu and called a press silence after that, flew to Hollywood to do the Oscars. He's now in the Maldives, but still breaks his press silence to basically pour more vitriol on this. A lot of comparisons being drawn with the 98 game between Juventus and Inter, and particularly that penalty incident where Ronaldo smashed into Giuliano, didn't get a penalty. Del Piero went up at the end of the pitch, got a penalty, missed that penalty, but they still won.
Right.
But yeah, and then Roma-Lazio, that was, I would say, perfect performance from Lazio last night. 1-2-0, first time they've won since they actually beat Roma in the Coppa Italia final nearly 4 years ago now.
Mm.
And yeah, a bit of a surprise there.
Yeah. Simone Inzaghi doing a brilliant job there.
Brilliant job. Keeps both kind of avenues into Europe open.
Right.
They're doing very well in Serie A at the moment. They've been constantly in the top six. And yeah, the winner of the Coppa Italia also gets into Europe. So they're keeping both avenues there open.
Right. Well, the game saw vast swathes of empty stadium, basically, because Roma fans are once again staging a boycott. The same old boycott, or was there something new that they've...
Well, the barriers that have been put up in the ends behind the goals where the ultras sit, they've only been partially removed.
All right, because so that was the crux.
Exactly. So right. Roma's still very hard line. We're going to protest against that. Lazio actually came back for this game because they thought, such a huge game. They got to see their team win.
Right, and they also got to boo and racially abuse Anthony Rudiger of Roma until the stadium announcer warned that if they didn't stop, the game would actually be stopped.
Yes, which, you know, considering they were 2-0 up, would have been terrible. Also, the fact that the last time these two sides met, Rudiger was subject to racial abuse, not from a Lazio fan, but from a Lazio player, Sinad Lulic. Remember, he said he was probably selling socks
on the street not
too long ago, and got a ridiculously lenient ban. I think it was actually rather than a match ban, I think it was a ban of he had to spend amount of time out of the game, which is only like it coincided with the winter break. So it was just ridiculous.
Right.
What
do you think will happen this time?
Well, I think they will get a fine. I think there might, depending on how many incidents like this have happened this season, they might be on probation, and that might then lead to an end being closed. But as I said, it depends how many incidents there have been.
Right, okay. The other big news from Italy, of course, is the fact that Maurizio Zamperini is going to step down.
Yeah.
Is he really?
Well, we don't know. He's threatened to in the past, but it does look like this Anglo-American consortium is going to come in and buy the club.
Right.
He's resigned, and managers in Italy breathe a sigh of relief.
Because he actually kept five or six managers employed per season, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think this is a great loss to the managerial world.
But
40 managerial changes in 15 years.
Mm.
Got to respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But leaves the club in some difficulty. They look like they're going to go down, which is, you know, is entirely his doing. It's got nothing to do with the coach, the players, you know, it's just him.
Did we say which club it was?
Palermo.
Yeah. And, that Allegri question from before. So has he been telling his friends that he's off to Arsenal?
I think that's fake news. I think it's we had the same stories. We had the same stories coming out last year when he was linked very strongly with the Chelsea job. I think he's been very coy. He's keeping his options open, keeping a lot of people guessing. Playing both games, saying, you know, I would like to one day coach in another league, different kind of club to the ones that I've coached with in the past, but also, you know, I can see myself being here for another 300 games. I can see myself, at the moment, I speak the local dialect here, so I'm part of the furniture. Mm. So he's just playing the game.
All right. Wow, Simon.
Yeah?
What do you make of all of that?
Wenger was asked this morning about rumours of a £30 million offer from China, which he nimbly side-footed.
Or did he welcome those questions as a way of underlining just how popular he is?
Possibly. I mean, his answer to that question was, like, we're here to talk about the game against Liverpool.
Hmm.
That's all I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
So, you know, he said that he would like to be a manager of Arsenal in the future rather than any other club, but he was not totally emphatic there.
Okay.
All right. It's Roy Hodgson. Barcelona, if Arsenal comes up, he's keeping his options open, you know.
Big boy. We've come to the end of today's allotted time. This is Football Weekly Extra signing off. Many thanks to Barry Glendening.
Cheers, Jimbo.
To producer Ben, you, James Horncastle, and Simon Burton. Great to have you back. Listeners, we will be back on Monday, so do make a point of joining us then. In the meantime, have yourselves a great weekend.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.